Okay, and we are live, and welcome, friends and fellow Damons. And we have with us again this evening my friend Benjamin Capps, who is a radical filmmaker who specializes in stop motion animation and life-size demon puppets. That's right. And he
Awesome.
does all
Wow.
kinds of he does music, neofolk music, which I'm totally into. So, hey, Benjamin, what's up? Welcome back.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me back on. I really appreciate it.
So how's it going? I know you've been working on this new film of yours, Terminal Emulator, and last
Yeah.
time you were on the show, we talked about it a little bit, but where are you at with it now? What's going on?
Well, I think that the last time I was on, I hadn't shot anything. I was still in pre-production. I was doing some casting and building a set, which is actually where I'm sitting now. I'll talk a little bit about the film and the plot again, but part of the film takes place in space. And I'll talk about why it really doesn't need to be in space, but it is. And it takes place on the surface of the moon Ganymede. I chose Ganymede for several reasons, which I will get into, but I'm actually sitting in my set right now. This is a living quarters on the moon Ganymede. It's supposed to look, there's the bunk and the video phone, and there's the demon that I'll talk about a little bit. So this is a cramped living quarters for a single man who lives on the moon Ganymede. He's a maintenance worker. And I built this in my house. I have some extra space in my home, so I built this 360 set, which is a little cramped, a little challenging to shoot in. Yeah, I got this finished. And since last we talked, all of the live action has been shot. It's all in the can, looks great. I'm absolutely thrilled with the way it came out, with the performance of my actors, with the casting, which I'll talk a little bit about. So my films combine live action with life-size stop-motion animation. This is one of my puppets. He's a demon. He's actually the main character of the film. If you go structurally, he's the main character.
Now he's
And
been in some other of your films too, hasn't he?
well, actually, he was. I only have only done a test with him.
Okay.
But in my last films, there was a puppet that actually looked like me in one of my films. There was. A Chinese-speaking demon in one of my films. So all my
Yeah.
puppets are life-size. They look similar. And I think the last time we spoke, he was in the background.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing now is the stop motion. It's a very slow process. It's just me. And if I can get 10 seconds of footage a night, I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good about it.
So why? Tell me, why is it so Ganymede? Where that? What is the moon of what planet is that?
Jupiter.
Jupiter.
Ganymede is one of Jupiter's moons. Ganymede is the largest moon in the solar system. It is probably the moon that would be most inhabitable. It has a magnetosphere. It has an ice crust, which means there's an abundance of fresh water. The gravity would be easiest to, through artificial gravity, which we don't have yet, would be easiest to mimic. And also Ganymede, the story of Ganymede, it is Greek mythology. Ganymede was Zeus's wine boy. He served wine in court, and he was sort of kidnapped to go to Mount Olympus. And some people speculate that the story of Ganymede was concocted to justify pederasty. So, and that's part of the plot of my film, that the story of Ganymede is not exactly legitimate mythology. It was something that was kind of added in to justify some things that were going on during that time.
So what is
So,
that? Pederasty, what is that?
pederasty is sexual attraction to young boys.
Oh, okay, like in a Greek kind of sense.
In a Greek kind of sense, because that wasn't always smiled upon at that time. So they came up with this story to justify, that kind of relationship using Zeus and this young boy. I don't know that the story was overtly sexual, but it was used as, kind of a tipping point for, for pederasty, which is also part of my story in my film. So,
Okay, so yeah, and I was thinking, I know I saw that. I must have seen the test reel that you did with that demon back
yes.
there.
Yeah, I did a test reel to make sure, because there's a lot of lip sync in this. The puppets actually talk, and syncing up a voiceover with a puppet in stop motion is pretty challenging. So I wanted to make sure that I could actually do that before I got involved, because this is a very dialogue heavy film. In most of my films, the demons don't talk that much, but this guy, he talks a lot. He actually talks in three different voices. Part of the plot of my film revolves around the concept of quaternity, which is a a Jungian term about completion or wholeness. And four aspects creating balance that Jung talks about quite extensively. So I only have 15 minutes of time in my film to convey these ideas, but this demon has three different entities inside of it battling for control. And it speaks in three different voices. One of the voices, it speaks French. Part of the plot of my film is based on a concept that Marquis de Sade talks about, which I completely disagree with. I love reading de Sade, but I don't agree with him. I'm not a sadist. But he states pleasure is weakened when shared. And that is something that a sadist would believe. He treats people as objects. And so the principal voice, booming voice in my demon is French. It's emulating Marquis de Sade. I have a friend who speaks fluent French, and he does this voice.
It
And
sounds right. I mean, I'm looking at him and it's like I'm hearing he would have like a deep kind of like French kind of thing. So that sounds very appropriate.
thank you. Yeah, he in my test, that's the voice. My friend James Cook, an actor I've worked with for a long time. He's an American, but he speaks fluent French and did the voiceover. Did a fantastic job, and there's some pitch shifting involved to make it more sinister. But that's the dominant voice. And the three entities are trying to create balance in a sense, in a Jungian sense, and trying to subsume and absorb another entity into this one body to be able to control it better. And that is the main character of my film, who is it's a woman who is stationed on Ganymede. She is a corporate executive, and she's not a very nice person. My films follow people who are nefarious, villainous, not very nice or likable people. And in this film and my last film, it follows people who have unusual sexual problems which are not only unusual but would not be very comfortable to reveal or to talk about. And they're trying to solve these on their own, and they usually lead to some sort of disaster, and demons will intervene to attempt to help them.
So did you film more? Because I know the previous film of yours that I saw, there was some sec where you made the puppet of yourself. There was
Yes.
some sexual content in there. Do you have more? Is there more sexual content in this one? And are you pushing the stock on that as well?
I am, yes. In fact, it's pretty challenging to cast actors when there's graphic sexual content in your film. My last film, Civet, was I played the main character. It was about a character who's autosexual, who through some childhood trauma is sexually attracted to themselves. And as a result of this causes some problems with their relationships and dealing with it, and they try to meet someone in real life who looks similar to them to get out this sexual quandary, and it doesn't work out. There's some violence involved and a kind of a murder involved. So a demon, a Rakshasa, which is a demon that's take a type of demon that's taken from Buddhism and Jainism, which is a
Oh
small bit
yeah.
of inspiration,
Yep.
a shapeshifter. Comes in the form it, the demon looks like me, and basically I get fucked in Naraka by a demon that looks like me, and that solves my problem. I get what I want. The demon gives me what I want. I get to essentially fuck myself.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned Rakshasa. I know you must have mentioned this when we talked about Civet before, and I love the film, but I've been reading the Ramayana lately.
Yes,
It
yes.
it's all about Rakshasas and armies of Rakshasas and all
Yes.
kinds of blood and gore and nasty stuff.
Yeah, there are different kinds of Rakshasas, but there are very aggressive, very blood and gore Rakshasas. And I actually discovered the word Rakshasa from Dungeons and Dragons when I was a kid in one of the monster manuals. You know, there was it's the Rakshasas in the form of a tiger, and it's got a cigarette holder, and it's wearing a smoking jacket and it's smoking. It's like, what is this thing? So I read about it, and there's of course Gary Gygax's description, but I thought, where does this come from? I have to know what this is. And that really opened the door to, Eastern mysticism for me, and just the different types of imagery and iconography that Buddhism and Jainism and Hinduism use versus Abrahamic religion, which I was raised a Methodist. I don't practice that anymore, but this really blew my mind, the just the way the supernatural beings present themselves and the concepts of hell and punishment. Like, do Buddhists have a hell and punishment? They do. It's just handled very differently. And so this demon that looks like me is a shapeshifter. It's a Rakshasa, and it's not an army, and it doesn't kill me per se, but it subsumes me in a way, much like this demon wants to subsume the main character in my film.
Right. So I want to talk more about Eastern religion, but first let's get back to the sex. Let's talk about the sexual content. And everyone's going to want to know, what is the sexual content like in this film? For, some people, that's going to be a selling point. So
definitely. Absolutely. And in my last film, I played the main character, and I chose to do that versus casting an actor because I knew I would be willing to do whatever was required. Autosexual, I'm masturbating, laying naked on a mirror. That's the first thing you see in the film. The actor that I originally wanted to cast objected to this. This person did children's theater, said, no, I can't do this. This will damage my ability to do children's theater, whatever. So I decided, I would do this. So the actress who is my lover in the last film, played by Catherine Bellantone, she's absolutely wonderful. She's playing the main character in my new film. And Katie, she's Antonin and Arto said, I call for actors burning at the stakes, laughing at the flames. She exemplifies that quote. She is willing to do whatever it takes to tell the story and really put herself through the punishments that the story requires in order to purvey them to the audience. So I knew Katie would be willing to do whatever I ask. And I had to cast her lover, who is a man on Ganymede, who is her subordinate, that she is having a dominant mommy, little boy relationship with, hence Ganymede, hence pederasty. They do this mommy, little boy sex role play, but in the context of my film, it's done in a very unhealthy way. When I take things from my films that are sexual, I take things that, confession time, I kind of like intimately, things I'm kind of into, kinks and things, and I twist them in such a way that it's like, how can this be made really, really unhealthy? So I've got some experience with it, but how can this go really badly? So she's having this relationship with this guy, and it's clear she's abusing him. She's using him, and he's getting something out of it. But she finds out she's going to get transferred back to Earth early, and she decides to just sneak out and abandon the guy. And he catches her leaving, and he self-harms in front of her, and this changes her. But while she's being abusive toward him, the demon is watching her do all of this, and they're like, she's perfect. She's going to be our fourth aspect. She's a horrible, horrible human being, and she's objectifying this guy. Pleasures weaken when shared. I mean, this guy's an object to her. So they, through way of use of a drug, which is something which I was inspired to use through reading Palmer Eldritch multiple times, that's how the demons present.
Let me ask you this, would it be if the sexual content in it, if you went through a standardized rating system, would it be PG?
Probably NC-17. You don't see genitalia. You don't see penetration. However, the first scene, spoiler alert, is her on top of him, penetrating him from behind with a strap on. And my actors are, for all intents and purposes, naked. I did hire an intimacy coordinator for this film. For Civet, I didn't have that.
Wow, what was that like?
That was a great choice, actually. It really made the actors feel a lot more comfortable. When I was casting actors, they asked a lot of questions about the sexual content. Are you going to see my genitals? What do I have to do? There was some natural apprehension. Excuse me. But Bella Alonso, my intimacy coordinator, if anybody needs to hire an intimacy coordinator, I highly recommend her. She was fantastic. Really made the actors feel at ease. Had long conversations one-on-one with them about what their boundaries were, what they were comfortable with. There were special modesty garments that were silicone that were, applied over the actor's genitals. So they appear to be naked, but, your business is covered. There's no genital contact. And once the actors got on set, once we had a full crew here and we started choreographing the scene, it was a switch. All of the apprehension went away and they became very excited about it. In fact, there are two scenes with Katie and Gabriel Fries, who's playing the little boy character. And they're doing mommy, little boy sexual kink, very violent. It's clear that he's being abused. And the actors decided on their own to really take it to, and they wanted to take it to another level. They were getting very excited about how uncomfortable it was making them feel, and clearly how uncomfortable it was making the crew feel. So I was sitting back at the monitor with my assistant director, and Katie and Gabriel like poked their head around the corner and say, "Hey, we've got an idea." They look like excited school children. It's like, Gabriel said, "Would it be cool if I like suck on her nipple like a baby?" My jaw hit the floor. I was like,
like,
yeah, that's great.
Of course.
Of course it would. Oh my God, you have to ask. But it was so adorable. They look like school kids. And I looked at Katie and I said, "Are you comfortable with this?" She's like, "Oh yeah, of course. This is really going to take it to this next level." I was like, "Is our intimacy coordinator okay with this?" "Yeah, she's great with it." So they did, and made it a lot more grotesque. If I'm watching my own material on the monitor and I'm feeling like ooky, I know it's, if I'm feeling something, I know it's going to sell. And they really, really took it to the next level. And as I'm editing the film and watching it now, it really blows me away what they're doing.
Wow. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. I feel like I've seen like some test clips of it, because a lot of the scenes that you're describing, it's like, didn't you have like some test or some basic?
I've been putting some little test things and some still images up.
Right, right. And it's just like, as you describe it, it's like I just have these, I don't know, maybe it's just I have the images like flashing in my head, but it just sounds like it has such a cool atmosphere, such a dark atmosphere to it. And you, the way that you have this ability to create these total atmospheres. In your previous things that I've seen that are chilling and just communicate so much. And then the fact that there's this storyline in it that is like so unique and engaging, and just immediately starts raising questions. So I want to ask you a little bit about your set design, and you got this like beautiful one like right behind you. Like, how do you create all this? Do you choose like every little thing? Are you involved with every little, every aspect of it, every detail of it? Or does someone else give you input? Or how do you put all that together? How did all that come
That's a
together?
great question. It's really entirely me until the day I shoot. And this isn't fair because I do collaborate with people beforehand. But in terms of my production design, my set design, I'm doing this all by myself. I've essentially built a room within a room here. I spend a lot of time at Menards. I don't know if where you live, if you have Menards, but the hardware store. It's my favorite hardware store. It's set up in such a way that's really good for
you save big money at
save big
Menards.
Money. I do. I always do the rebate stuff. You get some money back. They really entice you back in. But I just walk around Menards and look for things that look futuristic. And you know, I have like, let's see if you can see, like over here on the wall, there's some HVAC stuff here. Those are gutters that are ribbed, and there's one of my puppets here. So I just look for things that are ribbed or corrugated, and just, you know, I like burnt orange. I like 70s aesthetic. So I have some burnt orange carpet squares that I found. And so all of this is just kind of make it up as I go, which is scary because I don't sometimes know what my next step is going to be. But
and where's that built at? Is that in a studio somewhere, or?
Right now, my house is a four flat. It's a 4-unit apartment building. I used to live here with my former girlfriend and a guy I did music with, but they no longer live here. So this is the living room of my ex-girlfriend's apartment. So it's
okay.
Empty. So I have all of the space. It's kind of nice.
Okay, so it's your it's your home. So you live in this area.
I do. Somebody joked that I should have an Airbnb where I allow people to live on Ganymede for a night and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This, you know, once you get close to this, you can tell that there are a lot of flaws and imperfections. But on camera, it looks pretty convincing. And in front of me, you can't see it, but there's a big porthole. And we did green screen, and you're going to be able to see the surface of Ganymede and Jupiter in the background of that. So I'm working on my green screening technique.
Okay, so then you'd mentioned earlier it's in space, but it doesn't have to be in space, and you're going to tell me why.
It doesn't, yeah. When I go to film festivals and I show my films, people look at it and say, okay, we really like the 70s, you know, aesthetic and the like old technology stuff. But, you know, from the story you're telling, it doesn't really have to be that way. Why are you doing this? And, you know, it really just comes down to, it just turns me on. I really like old Cronenberg. I like 70s sci-fi, and I like burned orange. I like a 70s vision of the future, like what we call stunted technology now, because You know, I was born in the 70s and in the early 80s. That's when I first started getting excited about stuff, and technology seemed really fascinating. So that really sort of burned in my brain. Yeah, the story I'm telling doesn't have to be in space. I just wanted it to. I really wanted to build, I should have brought it down. I'm building a spaceship model, and we're going to do like the old 60s Star Trek. We're going to have it with a green screen. We're going to have Jupiter. The Juno probe that NASA sent to Jupiter recently got some great 4K public domain footage of Jupiter. So we're going to have that in the background. So, yeah, I think it just adds another layer of excitement. It
That's
may be
awesome.
what I'm doing isn't really even maybe sci-fi. I don't know, but I call it that. I really want it to be sci-fi. So,
Yeah, it feels sci-fi to me. There's no doubt about it. This is
thank you.
sci-fi. This is hardcore sci-fi. And you know, I've got to share something with you.
Please.
You mentioned Star Trek. So
Yeah.
where I live, there's a channel that shows at night. It shows it goes into Star Trek mode. And it shows 60s Star Trek, followed by Next Generation Star Trek, and then all the other, you know, stupid ones that like come out that come on after it. But I watched for a while. I watched regularly. I watched 60s Star Trek, which I've, you know, grew up on already. Love it. And then I watched Next Generation, which I watched a bit of when I was in you know, college. And I watched both of them back to back, and I realized something. I realized that the space special effects scenes in the 60s Star Trek are infinitely more realistic and believable. They're more incredible and just so just every time they show, you know, it's just a few, you know, a few minutes like every episode, but you know, the maneuverings around planets and the Klingon, it's like done so well. And the Next Generation and everything after it sucks so bad
Well, I
because they
agree.
CGI everything,
Agree.
and it's like you're watching. All of a sudden, this part, it turns into a cartoon. And
So
at the
jarring.
time, everyone thought, "Oh, this is so like, you know, this is so like cutting edge and ahead of it." But you know what? It's not. Actual like devices and stuff, and use of lighting and just, you know, trying to make things how it would look if you were like there. Is just it lasts. It has more, in my opinion, has way more staying power than any of than the CGI stuff does. So
Definitely. And when they
that's my
remastered
rant
all the old
on
60 Star Treks and put them on Netflix, they removed all of they redid those the ship orbiting all the spaceship stuff. Now it's CGI. They cut out all the stuff that they did in the 60s, which is in my opinion just a slap in the face to those original artists that did that. Shame on them. There was a reason they did it because of upscaling, but I think it's they could have worked around that. They should not have changed that.
Oh, that's horrible. It's
So
horrible.
that's a big part of the reason I wanted to put a spaceship in this. It's only going to be like 10 seconds of spaceship, but you know, it's an homage to something that really touched me as a child, so.
Right. So, okay, so you got space scenes, you got spaceship scenes. Is there any dog fights?
No, the spaceship is just a solar cruise ship. It's just a ship that
Okay.
is carrying the main character back to Earth. But she does, there is a scene that takes place in a lavatory, and I've built the lavatory set across the way here. So I've got another space. So there are two sets that I built. There's a bathroom, and then there's this. And part of the film takes place on Earth, which is in her other lover's living room, which is actually my living room upstairs. So everything was shot completely in my house, which saves a lot of money.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, speaking of nudity and Eastern religion, when you mentioned the Jainism influence, I had to say, well, about the only thing I know about Jainism is Jainists get to be naked all day for their whole life. And what a religion.
Right, exactly. Nudity is a big part of that. Kind of an antithesis to Christianity when nudity was seen as, you know, in the Garden of Eden was seen as a bad thing.
Right. So could you talk more about the influences, how those influences like and the Eastern Jainism in particular, I'm interested in. What is the connection with that?
Well, the connection, I will say that when it comes to, I'm not a Buddhist and I'm not a Jainist. And when it comes to the depths of Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism, I don't have the greatest understanding. I don't practice those spiritualities. But what really drew me to it was when I started looking into Rakshasa and the imagery, I discovered in China there is a cultural heritage site called Dezu, the Dezu rock carvings, and it started in the 7th centuries when these rock carvings began, and it is some iconography from all of these spiritualities from Buddhism and Taoism, and there are huge sections of it dedicated to punishment, to naraka, and how punishment is doled out as karmic retribution, how it's different than Christianity. And this was around the time I was discovering Ray Harryhausen, stop motion animator, who I really love, and seeing, where, in like Golden Voyage of Sinbad, there's Kali with all of these arms that he's like, what is this? What is this? Where is he drawing this from? So, yeah, seeing the imagery that is used is so completely different than Abrahamic religion. And I work for the Art Institute Museum, and we have a huge Asian gallery, and I get to walk through this every day, and all of the avatars of Vishnu are represented in these big stone carvings, and how they look and how different this is than what I was raised on. In fact, I have this is a I don't know if you're gonna be able to see this very well. This is something I framed in my hallway. This is some get a reflection. This is some imagery of Naraka. I don't know if you can see, you're seeing yourself there, but can you see this?
I could see it.
These are just punishments and things, but you've got these big animal-headed things like torturing people and having a great time. And this is just how they represent, this is your punishment. But what you'll notice about this is, these things are like really beautiful landscapes. There's like green trees and rolling lush meadows and blue sky and stuff. And then, you got these people being disemboweled and things like this is really fascinating because you don't in Christianity, you don't They don't display things like this exactly. So
Right.
yeah, just the way big animal-headed deities and things really turned me on when I was a kid. And so that's what I'm trying to represent in my films. It's just the way that it looks.
Yeah. I fell down a big rabbit hole a little while back with an ancient Chinese Taoist manual called Secret of the Golden Flower.
Okay.
And after we talked last time, it occurred to me afterwards, I wish there'd been bandwidth to bring that up and talk about that, because there's so many things that I see, elements that I see reflected in a lot of your work that you're presenting here. And I'll just to make a general sort of like comment about between like Chinese ancient Chinese Taoist inner alchemy, and as well as Sanatan Dharma and Hinduism and Bhagavad Gita and going on through all of this stuff. One of the really consistent things throughout all consistent ideas throughout all that is an idea of a life force energy. And most all of those religious systems are in some way based around this concept, or like Kundalini is another
Yes.
term for this,
I was thinking of that.
based around this idea of a life force energy that is also is connected, like it's like cosmic and everything, but within us as human beings, it's connected with our sexuality.
Yes.
It has a relation to sexual energy, and then. If you're familiar with Wilhelm Reich and orgone theory, which I have a feeling you are, then it starts to like you start to see that there's this thread, and that's kind of the one thing that there was probably early on in Christianity. There's probably something like that, but it got turned into Holy Spirit, and it got turned into only the church can like the church just controls all of
Oh,
that.
absolutely.
You don't do anything with that on your own,
Right.
right? Which that's the whole purpose, is to do something with it on your own. You have to go through the work of building your soul by yourself. No one's going to do it for you, kind of thing. But
Sure. Yeah, sexual energy is extremely powerful, and I've incorporated that into my personal left-hand magic practice. I've done sex magic, and it's amazing what happens. I mean, when you incorporate that into ritual practice, how that brings about what you want based on the ritual that you're doing. I was shocked. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and it's and that comes through in your films too. I mean, in you know, Civet is like this is like a big sex magic ritual in one sense. It's like a cybernetic, you know, Neo Tokyo kind of like sex magic ritual. I mean, the auto autosexual aspect of it, that's a part of it, and it's very, very intense.
Yes.
Intense stuff.
Yeah. When the demons present, it's there's some drug use, and then the demons are there, and then it cuts back to the main character having sex with her other partner, and the demons influence what's happening during the sex, and it's not good. It's they're trying to teach her a lesson that she should abuse her partner, and she doesn't do it in the right way, so they make her do it again. So there's
right.
a repeat, and in the concept of Naraka, you. Through karmic retribution, you go through and you have a very long punishment, and then you get to go back and start living your life again. And sometimes that's done actually in parallel with your life. You're being punished at the same time that you're existing, and kind of like going to prison and having consecutive or is it concurrent consecutive? I get them mixed up. Concurrent life sentences. It's similar to that. So with my film, there are two different timelines. Something's happening over here. Something's happening here. And then there's the demon stuff. So there are three timelines happening at once, which all converge, which is something through Jungianism and Jainism that is talked about in terms of
just mind blowing. Now
it's so mind blowing, and I only have 15 minutes to show all of this, so I'm scared I'm trying to cram too much in sometimes.
Now I heard that you got our friend Richard Leviathan
is
like
Richard.
Doing some voice work for you here on this.
Definitely. I want to talk about Richard and coo about him a lot. He was actually my introduction to neo-folk music back in 1997 when I was goth boy wearing skirts and stuff and really into like Skinny Puppy, Sisters of Mercy, who I still love, by the way. I mean, that's not, I went to Chicago in 1997 because Death in June, Boyd Rice, and Strength or Joy were on tour. And, you know, I had a surface level knowledge of Death in June. I'd heard some of their music. I'd never heard Strength or Joy, but I love Boyd Rice. I love Non. I'd gotten into him because I was into Skinny Puppy and Throbbing Gristle, and he was mentioned in some articles, so I had to seek him out. So I really wanted to meet Boyd Rice. So I went up, and I was all skirted up and had makeup and stuff out. And then Strength or Joy is the opening act. That's Richard Leviathan and a guy named Timothy Jen he did music with. And they come out on stage with these like nice, clean-cut guys with button-down shirts and acoustic guitars. And, you know, I'm used to Skinny Puppy, so like, you know, what is this going to be? Blew me away. It absolutely, these two guys with acoustic guitars and a floor tom, I couldn't believe that this ferocity of music was being made like this.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I saw Death in June blew me away, and Non was last. And of course, that was just a wall of noise. It was just absolutely what I wanted. It was really, really, really grabbed me by the soul. And I met Boyd at that show, and he gave me his phone number, and I ended up calling him at one point. We talked for 4 hours. We became friends and eventually collaborators. But that is what made me decide to stop doing, you know, electronic music. I was trying to be Kevin Key. I wasn't very good at that kind of music. So, but I got an acoustic guitar and some stuff, and I started writing some neo-folky style songs. And Strength Through Joy had an address in their record. So I just made a CD and sent a nice letter to Richard Leviathan. And I got a great response from him. What a nice guy. He sent me this really nice response, got his phone number. He was in Australia, or no, he was in England at the time. We talked on the phone, really nice guy. We ended up collaborating over the years. I ended up collaborating with Death in June, of course. I sent Douglas some stuff, super nice guy. Boyd and Douglas and Richard did so much for my neo-folk career. If it wasn't for them, I would not have gotten to where I was as a musician. But fast forward to now, Richard's doing some other things now. He's writing some fiction, writing some prose and some odes, and doing some voiceover work. So I said, because he wrote a story, a fictional story, where he mentions having an American friend who's this weird filmmaker. So he kind of hinted that's kind of based on me. That made me feel really good. So I said, hey, I'm doing this film. I've got a little bit of voiceover. It's actually the announcement on the Solar cruise ship. It's the captain of the ship making an announcement. You've got such a beautiful voice. Would you be willing to do that? He said, absolutely. So he sent it to me. It's amazing. It sounds so good.
That's awesome.
I'm thrilled to be able to collaborate with someone from that art form in this art form. I'm able to bring my art forms that I've done over the years together.
Yeah, that is excellent.
Really great guy. And also there's another musician named Axel Menz, who's in the band Hecate. I played at the Wave Gothic Festival in 2012 with my band Luftwaffe, and he was there. I was a big fan of his music. I got to meet a lot of people at that show. Everybody was there. It was kind of crazy. I got to meet the Unslaughter Natives guy. Met all sorts of cool people there. But Axl was there. The Hecate show was fucking kick ass, and we kind of became friends. And I went to Germany and hung out with him. And he actually is now going to do the German voice for this puppet. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so he's kind of branching out now and maybe doing something kind of theatrical. So I'm hoping the theatricality that I'm introducing to these folks makes them want to do some more stuff, and I can work with them more in that way. It feels really good.
That's so awesome. No, I'm
Yeah.
so glad. I mean, you're bringing together so many really wonderful influences into your creation here, and I'm so excited to see the final result. Now I got to
Yeah.
ask you. So I
Yeah.
put up I'm using my background here, Palmer Eldritch,
Palmer Eldritch.
from Philip K. Dick's The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch,
Yes.
in honor of the last time we talked, we had a conversation about that. So,
We did.
have you done any made any progress on getting the rights to produce this film?
Well, it's funny you mention that. Well, yeah, Palmer, I have my copy here. This is my original Doubleday copy of Palmer Eldritch. The book has a lot of story problems, but it's my favorite book, hands down. It's exactly the kind of sci-fi I like. I've read it probably 10 times. I actually, in 2007, long time ago now, I, for fun, adapted it into a screenplay. There's a screenplay of this that I wrote. I can't show it to anybody because I don't own the rights to it, but I've always fantasized about, in my style, like this proto-70s style, directing this. I realize I'm not Philip K. Dick. It is not my story. It's not my thing, but I just saw, I guess, a couple of months ago that Netflix acquired the rights to it.
Oh,
And
God.
yeah, that scares me to death. No offense, it may come out great, but my heart sank when I saw that. It's like,
Oh,
okay,
dear.
because I'm a filmmaker and I'm making some progress, but I'm kind of a nobody right now. But I found out who the head of programming was for Netflix. I got their email address. That took some doing. And I sent them a very nice email. I sent them links to all my film, just, hey, it's my favorite book. I've already scripted this. You don't know who I am, but at least look at my work.
Wow.
You might want to do some kind of like long shot thing and let me direct. It's like, I'm sure they've got a short list of who they want to direct it. I sure hope that on that short list is David Cronenberg. David Cronenberg should definitely be the one to direct it, if not me, of course. And I might screw it up. I might disappoint throngs and throngs of Philip K. Dick fans. They may look at my work and go, oh my God, what's this? This guy's butchered this book.
Yeah.
But it's been one of my pet fantasies. There would be some stop motion in it. There's a scene with some evolved humans that happens. That would definitely be stop motion. So yeah, my friends have
You could
sold me.
also do the Perky Pat scenarios could be stop motion too, because it goes into a kind of an alternate kind of reality,
I thought about
during
that. Yeah,
yeah.
the Perky Pat stuff would be really great at stop motion. My friends, giving me a pat on the back, they said, well, if Netflix completely botches this, you can do the reboot in 10 years. Like, okay, that's fine.
Right. Do a reboot or do a sequel or do a prequel or something, you know?
There's got
Palmer
to be an
Eldritch, the early
angle I can
years.
work. Yeah, right, exactly. Before he gets his eyes gouged out and loses his arm and his
You
teeth.
could say he got all those things, how he lost his arm and got his eyes gouged out and his teeth and everything.
That's a good idea, actually. Maybe I can work that angle. That would be
It
a lot.
happened right here, ladies and gentlemen.
So they haven't announced anything yet. I don't know what's going to happen. They bought it. It may be 15 years before they do anything with it. They may never do anything with it, but
Yeah.
I just hope it's done right because I love that book so much, and I hate when they take a book I love and screw it up on the screen,
Oh yeah. Yeah, me too. And you're so right. It's like, yeah, I know the book has it is like there's maybe I mean, I've gone back and I've read that one like three times, that one. And it's like other Philip K. Dick books, maybe I've read something, maybe Ubik I read twice, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like it doesn't matter the problems. That, you know what? And
It
I think
doesn't.
all of his books kind of will have like possibly some kind of little problem with
They
the
do.
reality in it, but that's the style. That's the world that he creates, where reality, you're not really sure about reality because sometimes things just don't add up, you know?
They don't.
so to speak. That's part of it. That's part of his world, you know?
They don't. And sometimes the mistakes are extremely endearing. I like things with mistakes. I mean, there was a piece of music that I used in a film a long time ago, and I chose that particular one because the pianist who played it, he makes a mistake or two in it. And I said, I really like it. He said, well, I made some mistakes. Like, that's why I like it, because the character in the film is making mistakes. And I think that that's important. The original Star Wars films, I mean, I like the original three Star Wars films. Lots of mistakes. Lucas, he fixed them. He should never have done that. He should, like a group of TIE fighters goes by and there's a black blob where they fucked up and there was supposed to be one.
Right.
That's so endearing. It really makes, it really speaks to your soul when you see that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it shows the struggle that the artist had, or that the writer had, in bringing this. I got to make this happen, make it happen. So,
100%,
totally.
All right, good. Well, when do we get to see the movie?
I am hoping that Terminal Emulator will be done May 1st ish. That should give me enough time to get the stop motion done, figure out my chroma key with the green screen stuff, because that's kind of new to me. There's a musician that I've asked to do some music for it, and he's great. I really like his music. He wants to see it before he can commit, because there's some intimate content, and he wants to make sure that his music is represented properly. So, but that's okay. I get it. Yeah. I have to compose a lot of music myself. So yeah, that 3 months from now, I hope to have it in the can so I can start submitting it to festivals.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Excellent. Well, keep us in the loop, and we'll make sure everyone we know knows about it when it comes out, because I know it's something that everyone is going to want to see. And if you haven't already, go on, you can go see Civet. You can see Civet on YouTube, right?
Correct. You can go to my YouTube channel. You can also go to The Inner Below. That's me, theinnerbelow.com. That stuff is there. The Inner Below has, there's, I have a YouTube channel. I also, you can follow me on Instagram. My Instagram is now public. It's the_inner_below. That's how you can find me. I follow this gentleman. You can find me through him also. Yeah. So, and you can see some of my past work.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much, Benjamin. Keep making that dark, demonic stuff, and keep fighting the good fight. Keep the
thank
dark
you.
Fires burning.
Thank you for having me on again. I really appreciate it. Shem Hamfarash.
All right. Shem Hamfarash. Well, I'll stop recording.
Cool.